we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. It's a live edition of the show, and we've got two special guests we'll bring you on in the second and the third segment. And this segment, you just have me, for better or worse. Before we jump into our scripture, which I failed to do on Monday, and anybody who listens to the show frequently probably picked up on that, so that was my bad. And I do make mistakes, believe it or not. Ask my wife. But so we'll cover Psalm 137 here in just a few minutes. But a few housekeeping items that are exciting that I want to make sure I get to. Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency, that full film is out now at culturewarrior.movie. So if you want to watch the entire 96-minute film on the life of Don Wildman and how on earth we have American Family Radio and American Family Association and the 45-plus year history of our work, you can go over to culturewarrior.movie. But it's more than just about a history lesson on AFA and Don Wildman. It really gives you the full context of why we do what we do and why we want you to be engaged and be salt and light in American society today. So there's a lot weaved in there, and Lord willing, you're going to get a lot out of it if you go watch it. So culturewarrior.movie, we're going to have MD on here in a little while to talk about that. Activate Summit 2025. This is our first ever Activate Summit. You've been hearing us talk about our Activate curriculum. Well, with the curriculum comes a summit. Very, very good fit there. June 12th through the 14th of 2025 here in Tupelo, Cadence Bank Conference Center, June 12th through 14th. The pricing is very affordable. For example, $75 for ages 13 and up, $50 for ages 6 to 12, and free for children 5 and under. We want the entire family to come. Our theme is Biblical Bedrock, Building on the Authority of Scripture. Speakers like Dr. Frank Turek, Alex McFarland, Abraham Hamilton III, Ed Vitagliano, Todd Herman, and the list goes on. We'll all be here at the Activate Summit, activate.afa.net, activate.afa.net. And then we'll be talking more about Samaritan's Purse, but National Collection Week is ongoing, and we encourage you to participate in Samaritan's Purse Operation Christmas Child. We'll be talking more about that here shortly. Psalm 137, reading a few verses in here. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat and wept. When we remembered Zion upon the willows, in the midst of it, we hung our harps. For there our captors demanded us songs, and our tormentors mirth, saying, sing us one of those songs of Zion, or one of these songs of Zion. So I could read more of this, but the essence of Psalm 137 is that the Jews, the Israelites, were in captivity, and they were sorrowful, and their captors were provoking them and saying, sing us a song, right? You're our servants now. And the people of Israel were having a hard time coming up with a song out of their heart because they were in the midst of trial, tribulation, captivity. And so this really humanizes our experience, even in this day and age that we live in, that when you're in the midst of captivity, spiritual captivity, or maybe even physical captivity, it's hard to find the strength and the energy to sing a song, especially to your enemies. But this, at the end of the day, points to our Creator, God, and how we, even in the midst of trials, we get our joy and our passion from Him, from our Creator, from our Sustainer, even in the midst of trial and tribulation. That's Psalm 137, verses 1 through 3. Well, the President Trump presidential transition is continuing to rock and roll. A lot of good appointments, and I've got some clips on these appointments now, but a lot of good appointments for President Trump. But I want to comment on this Representative Matt Gaetz appointment to Attorney General. And we don't know yet who the FBI director is going to be, but I'm hearing it's going to be somebody that we really like. But we'll wait and confirm that whenever the news comes out. But let's talk about this Representative Matt Gaetz situation, because I talked about this. I believe I talked about it either late last week or on Monday, because everything runs together with this news cycle that moves so fast. But nonetheless, I spoke to this a little bit earlier in the week or late last week. On Representative Matt Gaetz. And here's the thing. There's all kinds of accusations against Representative Matt Gaetz. And I don't know what's true and what's not, because I don't know Matt Gaetz personally. I haven't spent time around him. I don't really know intimately people that know him. So I don't know about Matt Gaetz. Okay, so I can't like raise my hand and say Matt Gaetz is the greatest guy I've ever known, and I can't also sit here and say to the contrary. All right, so but let me just give you an overall assessment of what's going on in Washington. All right, so Representative Matt Gaetz was appointed to be President Trump's Attorney General, and there's been this talk about this ethics committee and their investigation into Representative Matt Gaetz. And I wasn't even going to talk about this today, but leave it to Bobby to bring it up coming into the show. And I'm like, you know what? I got to talk about that. I've got to talk about it. So this ethics investigation, let me just give you the backgrounder, okay? The ethics committee in the House of Representatives is a weapon of the establishment, point blank. And this has been a thing in the past. This isn't a new phenomena. Conservatives have known that the Ethics Committee, which is actually headed up by a representative from Mississippi, Michael Guest, that committee, by its fruit, by its deeds, by its actions, is a weapon of the House leadership that mostly has been used in the past. If you don't get in line with House leadership or the establishment, they will use the Ethics Committee as a weapon against you. And I think the Representative Matt Gaetz thing is bearing this out. And here's why I say that, because there's going to be some people that might disagree with me, but here's why I say that. Number one, the Ethics Committee has investigated dozens, if not hundreds, of lawmakers. Over the years, hundreds, but recently dozens. And they selectively pick and choose which reports they release and which ones they don't. Because they don't release all of them, trust me, they don't. And sometimes they actually reach settlement agreements with accusers, with people who've launched accusations against lawmakers. And so I find it interesting that on one hand, the Ethics Committee and some lawmakers are engaging in non-disclosure agreements and settlement agreements and payoffs, which there's a time and a place for that. I understand the pragmatic reality of civil lawsuits, right? But then on the other hand, they're like, yeah, we might release this Matt Gaetz report. Wait, what? So some of the reports and investigations are confidential and they're private. But then some you're dangling over the lawmakers' heads going, yeah, we might release this. So there's a lot of inconsistency there. But these investigations, another reason that I know that these investigations are completely disingenuous, especially the ones they pick and choose which reports to release, is because the whole ethics committee framework and the premise of an ethics committee is fraudulent on its face. And here's why I say that. We don't need an ethics committee. That's not in the Constitution. there's this thing called terms, and this thing called elections, and this thing called a free press, and this thing called voters. And so if there's a genuine moral problem with a lawmaker, well, they're up for re-election every 2 years. Not to mention the House of Representatives, they can censure and they can kick out lawmakers. And so this false premise that we've got to have an ethics committee, I believe, is further proof that their entire apparatus and purpose is not really about ethics and morality. It's more about making sure that they've got a tool in their pocket that they can investigate their political opponents if they need to. We have elections. We have a free press. There are other tools and mechanisms to root out corruption. We don't need a House Ethics Committee. There's this thing called law enforcement, the Department of Justice, the FBI, local and state law enforcement. If there's criminality going on, well, let's let law enforcement handle it. There's a reason we have three branches of government. So the Ethics Committee on its face really shouldn't exist. But if we want to talk ethics, this is where it gets interesting. Let's just be honest, okay? Let's say on the air what we're all thinking, those of us who know how Washington works. If we want to talk about ethics, well, what are ethics without morality? What's morality without biblical truth? So it all points back to Scripture. Because you can't make a case for me at all that there's ethics without morality, and there's no morality without absolute truth. There's no absolute truth without the Bible. But let's talk about ethics. So if we're going to start investigating things that are unethical, which I don't really like the word ethics anyway, it's been a secular term historically in modern history. I like the term morality, right? Because I can directly tether that back to the Bible, and we can look at what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad. And there is, I'm not going to say a litany, but there is the existence of immorality in Congress. I'm not going to say rampant because I can't necessarily prove that, but there is a substantial amount of immorality that exists today and has existed historically in the halls of Congress. What am I talking about? I'm talking about homosexuality. I'm talking about adultery. I'm talking about fornication. I'm talking about lawmakers that have abortions. I'm talking about insider trading with the stock market. I'm talking about substance abuse, including alcoholism, within the halls of Congress. Boy, did this just get uncomfortable. Because you said, let's talk about ethics, Walker. And I said, okay, let's talk about ethics, i.e. morality. And so you can't, with any sense of credibility, say that we've got an ethics committee and Matt Gaetz is an immoral guy and he's got a dirty past, which we don't know if that's true. That's the accusation. But the examples of immorality within Congress are plentiful. And I could bring news stories. I don't have to give rumors and hearsay. I could bring reported accusations from credible news outlets over the years about the activities of lawmakers outside of their official business. And we could just have our own ethics report here on my show. But we can't do that because it's hearsay. It's not corroborated. Law enforcement hasn't convicted. But yet with Matt Gaetz, we want to do that. We want to do the hearsay, we want to do the rumors, and we want to do the whole ethics discussion. All right? So if we're going to be consistent, then let's talk about all of Congress when we're talking about morality.
this year has just flown by.
I know.
It's already November.
As this year comes to a close, the AFA Foundation would like to invite you to make a planned gift to American Family Association. With a planned gift, you partner with American Family Association and become a Christian patriot, an activist, a broadcaster, a Bible teacher, a servant, and an evangelist advancing God's kingdom in America. Consider the many ways your planned gift can help restore a biblical worldview in our nation, as well as bring financial stability to your family. A planned gift can take the form of a charitable gift annuity, an IRA charitable rollover, or a gift of stock that helps you avoid capital gains tax. And many of these benefits can be achieved with a surprisingly modest gift. Contact the AFA Foundation and learn more about making a planned gift. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website at afafoundation.net.
At the Core podcast are available at afr.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
There's honey in the rock, water in the stone, manna on the ground, no matter where I go. I don't need to worry now that I know. Everything I need, you got. There's honey in the rock. Praying for a miracle, thirsty. You see, and I've tasted, it's not hard to see, only you can satisfy. There's honey in the rock, there's honey in the rock, there's honey in the rock, there's honey in the rock,
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. That song there is Honey in the Rock by Brooke Ligertwood. And I looked at the scripture behind that song, and that's one thing I encourage our audience to do. This is a rather side point, but there's a lot of songs that sound good out there. I'm talking about Christian music, but we have to, I would encourage you to be diligent about the purpose and the scripture behind music. Because some of it's not rooted in scripture at all. It's just feel-good music. But this song is out of Psalm 81, verse 16. But I would feed you with the finest wheat and with honey from the rock. I would satisfy you. That's the Lord speaking there. So pretty good song there. It's Worship Wednesday, and that song there is Honey in the Rock. M.D. Perkins is with us. He was with us several weeks ago talking about Culture Warrior. And he's back with us now in lieu of the full release. Hey, Michael, welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you.
Well, Culture Warrior, the full film is out there now. We've been touting it on the show at culturewarrior.movie. But I wanted to bring you in just to pitch it some more and really trigger interest in the full film.
Yeah.
Because we've had the trailer out there for a couple months, but now that we have the full film out there, we want as many people as possible to watch it. But let's go back to, once again, to the planning of the film, the putting together of kind of the layout of how you envisioned as the director of this film being displayed and shown to the viewing audience. I'm interested, I don't even know this myself, but did it ever take a turn as far as how you wanted to communicate the story of Don Wildman, the story of the culture war? Did it ever take a turn as far as like how to deliver that message? Or when you went into it 3-4 years ago, you know, you had your idea of this is how I wanted to portray the film and Don Wildman, and then that theme stayed consistent throughout. Tell me about kind of this struggle over how to display and how to show the life of Don Wildman.
Yeah, the idea behind making a movie, the way that I explain it to people is it's a lot like building a building and writing a book at the same time, because you're interacting with so many different people, collaborating with a lot of others. You're doing a lot of detailed research and a lot of time just kind of grinding through the work on your own. And there was a point when the movie kind of took a turn. I mean, I wanted it to feature a lot of archival footage because I knew that would just communicate so much about the era, get Don in his own words and all of that. But when we started working on this project, Walker, I mean, we didn't have all that footage.
Right, because you're talking 70s and 80s.
Right, mostly. 70s and 80s footage. I mean, stuff from the 90s. Because once you start doing something, there is a principle of unity that you're working through as an artist. So you're like, I don't want to start doing something. I don't want to represent him with archival footage in the 80s and not have him be able to speak in the 90s or 2000s.
Right.
So you're hoping that you can find all this material. And in God's providence, we did end up being able to find it. Some of that came internally. Some of that meant us going to archival warehouses or things that had digitized a lot of old videos of news stories and things like that. But I knew what I wanted. I didn't know I was going to be able to do it. And so thankfully the Lord provided and we were able to do that.
What I wonder, Michael, is once again, we're talking to MD Perkins. He's he's one of our producers, one of our filmmakers here at AFA and specifically within American Family Studios. But one thing I'm curious about, and who we won't truly know, only the Lord knows, but what would America look like without Don Wildman? Because you've heard people say this. Yeah. I've heard people that know my grandfather and that knew my grandfather. I've heard them say, imagine what America would look like in 2024 without AFA and Don Wildman. But, like, I'm just thinking of some of the key. I'm thinking of the Reagan era.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of pornography, like, would it be mainstream and on bookshelves everywhere now? Like, it's intriguing to think about and kind of fearful of what America would look like with no AFA and no Don Wildman and no American Family Radio.
I mean, in some senses, I don't think you have to imagine it. I think you can just look at Europe. Because people have said, you know, I've heard this maxim for a while, you know, what happens in Europe, you know, takes 10 or 15 years to trickle down to America.
Yeah.
My question is, why does it take that long? Some things didn't take that long. Beatlemania didn't take that long.
Right.
But there wasn't anyone holding up a force to push back against Beatlemania.
Right.
You know, but there
was broadly accepted.
Exactly. And so I think there is a real tangible impact that we can point to and say there is a reason why America has held off some of these things for as long as it has. And it's because of men like Don Wildman who stood up and spoke out and got other Christians to be aware and be involved. And, I mean, you pointed to pornography. Yeah, if you walk into a grocery store right now and there aren't pornographic magazines all over the magazine racks, yes, people still buy physical magazines these days, even for pornography.
Yeah.
But it's not everywhere.
Right.
And that wasn't by accident.
And
that
the porn industry was wanting it to be everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And really, in the 70s and 80s, I mean, people in my generations don't realize these things were just common practice. That's part of what Don was bothered by, is that he would travel and he would look on magazine racks at the airports and out on the street corners.
Yeah.
And there were these things, and not just like, you know, the softcore stuff. I mean, it could get really raunchy really quick.
Yeah.
I mean, all of these things were just public on display.
Yeah, it's like you buy a soda and you buy your pornography magazine.
Right.
I mean, and that's not an exaggeration.
Right.
Hence the 7-Eleven issue.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You talk about Europe, and that triggered a thought about our role as Christians, because the scripture uses the term salt and light, which, you know, we've all heard the sermon about it being a preservative and things like that in the food industry. But You talk about Europe. I mean, Europe has it has, and I'm no history expert, but Europe has a lot of Christian history there. Mm-hmm. And I know obviously a lot of Paul's, you know, missionary journeys were in some of that region, more of the eastern part. But my point is that Europe has a lot of Christian roots and history. So it isn't as if Europe has always been this secular, you know, God-hating force, a part of the world, but that to your point, there wasn't and hasn't been a lot of resistance to evil and paganism and godlessness in Europe, maybe some pockets, but over in America, our literal roots from conception of America as we know it as a nation since the colonial era has been Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like rooted in our identity as a people. That doesn't mean everybody's a Christian, but a lot of people sympathize with Christianity, even today with the poor direction that we seem to be going in. But that purpose of kind of pushing back the darkness so that, number one, there's more room for the light, but also so that people have an opportunity to recognize God and salvation before they choose a path of destruction, both spiritual and literal. That's a concept that I think a lot of Christians maybe have either lost touch with or don't fully grasp, is that the Great Commission is our primary purpose, but part of the Great Commission is pushing back against darkness and evil. And if you forget that, and if you think it's all about just converting people to the faith, and you forget about pushing back on the darkness, so the darkness is just going to keep encroaching on the light.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one of those key parts of the Great Commission is to call all people to recognize what Christ's words are and the truth that's there. So, I mean, there's a discipleship character to that happens even by our public witness.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't make somebody a Christian if they decide to live in a more moral way or make a decision that is beneficial to society as a whole. But it is part of that public witness going forward.
Well, and how do we? I think I would go as far to say that what my grandfather Don Wildman, and once again we're talking to M.D. Perkins. He's a producer of the film Culture Warrior, Don Wildman, The Battle for Decency. That URL is culturewarrior.movie. I want to mention that before we keep getting in the weeds here. culturewarrior.movie. But I think what my grandfather was fighting against, and others in that era, was a wrong understanding of what it means to be a Christian in a culture and a society. Because the primary problem that my grandfather noticed was that other Christians weren't speaking up, at least in a broad sense, to get enough support and momentum to fight back against these issues. And there's this false premise that's even around today pretty broadly that Christianity is something that happens in your home, that happens when you go to church, and you might occasionally display your Christianity in public, but probably the opportunities of that are few and far between. But it's almost this like privatization of Christianity, which is not biblical under any circumstance.
Right. So I think part of the issue there, Walker, was, you know, in the early part of the 20th century, there was the fundamentalist movement, which was fighting back against the liberalization of the church that was happening theologically. Mm-hmm. And what that ended up happening was the trickle-down effect was a lot of Christians just receded from activity either at the denominational level. So you saw a fracturing of the church in a number of different denominations that were coming up, or smaller churches, Bible churches, things like this. But you also saw a resistance to the social gospel message that was part of this main catalyst of the liberalization of the church. So Christians were afraid of being involved lest they be labeled a social gospel person. Mm. And so it kind of took some clarifying over the years and some social upheaval and the decline of society as Christians stepped back from those public roles and that public witness for men like Don Wildman to speak up, or James Dobson and others to say that, no, like, we need to be involved, and this isn't dirty, this isn't sinful for you to be talking about these public issues or to be talking about politics or all these different things, that this is actually part of our Christian witness. So I think it's the long-term implications of that are still with us in a number of different facets.
Yeah, and a lot of the arguments against public displays of your faith and Christianity and the expression of your convictions in public and applying those to public law, I think a lot of that resistance is not in any way rooted in our national history and our national identity, such as these arguments against, you know, separation of church and state, and you shouldn't bring your religion to the public school, and all these different talking points that cause Christians to kind of flinch and be like, "Oh, am I being too aggressive in my faith?" That's not, when you look at America's founding documents, the founding fathers clearly understood that this nation, if it was going to be good and a beacon of hope and light and liberty to the world, then faith, specifically Christianity, was always going to be an integral part. Otherwise, you don't need a First Amendment, right? You don't need to mention God in our founding documents. But this is what's frustrating, is people that don't like that. It's one thing to say, I don't like that America's a Christian nation, but it's another thing to say America's not a Christian nation. Because I can understand people saying, well, I just don't like how America was set up. Well, go start your own country. But to reject that Christianity is supposed to be integral in our public life is a rejection of not only our biblical mandate, but also our founding fathers' intention on why they set up this land.
Yeah, I mean, part of Don's project was a bit of a reclamation project, reminding people, calling people back, reminding them of the founding roots. And like you said, I mean, if you don't like it, I mean, you know, go set up your own country. But I mean, Christians have felt intimidated by living in a highly secularized society. And we didn't realize how highly secularized it was until Don Wildman really spoke out about the secular humanism that was infiltrating through the television media, that it wasn't just that there was sex and violence on TV. You could see that plainly. But what you weren't seeing or understanding necessarily was that there was a worldview component behind it, about how you treat sexuality, how you talk about life, how you talk about religion and its role in society. And so you basically treat everybody like they don't have a religion. Right. And so, you know, how many characters did you see on TV that actually were religious? Not very many.
Right. And the producers, when my grandfather would confront them in these panels and interviews, they would admit that. I mean, they would say that basically we don't want to have a lot of Christianity and morals involved, and we're going to promote sex violence and then air quotes, you know, what the consumer wants, which the consumer is going to want what they've been conditioned to, right?
Exactly.
And there were a lot of people that didn't approve of the stuff they were pushing on television. MD, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, folks, culturewarrior.movie. And what we just talked about there is kind of a bonus feature. But if you want to watch the entire film, and we've got the Culture Warrior kit. And if you order the kit, it comes with a two-set DVD, which then has bonus features, which isn't even available on the website. So you have to get that DVD to get those bonus features. But all of that is available at culturewarrior.movie.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program. This is our last segment of the show. If you ever miss an interview or you miss a segment, no worries. It's the 21st century, and we have this thing called podcasting. So we publish the full show, the full program, actually without the breaks. So you get to bypass some of the breaks. We publish the full show in the form of a podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. So type in the name of the show, At the Core, whether you're on an Apple device, Android, Spotify, Roku, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can type in At the Core and click the subscribe button. And the show will be queued up in your library each and every day. We also have the video over on Facebook, At the Core on Facebook, have the video up there, and at stream.afa.net. One more item before we jump to our next guest is the few openings that we have for Israel. So we're going to the Holy Land in February of 2025. So in just a few months here, we're going to Israel. This is one of our makeup trips that we were supposed to take earlier this year, but then the war broke out in late 2023. And so we're going to take a group, about 100 people, to Israel in February of 2025, just coming up in a few months. And if you would like to go, we do have a few spots available. So I believe we have about 6 spots available as of earlier this morning. If you do want to go to Israel with us in February, I know for many of you, it's on your bucket list. You've wanted to do this your whole life. And so this might be an opportunity for you. So go to wildmangroup.com and check it out. Wildmangroup.com and check out the dates and the pricing and the availability there at wildmangroup.com. And my disclaimer, and I'm going to keep saying this, at least for this trip, the disclaimer is if you have any doubts or any concerns about going to Israel in light of the conflict that they've been involved in, then you just don't need to go. You don't need to book a flight. You don't need to book a travel. You just don't need to go. But if you understand what's going on over there, you're comfortable with going, you know the risk involved, then we would love for you to join us. And I have five little kids. I have a wife. And if I was concerned about my personal safety, I wouldn't go. Israel is a very secure nation, by the way. They take their security very seriously. They don't want any American citizens being injured on Israeli soil. There's always risk involved with travel. There's risk involved in Israel. But they're very good about their security. And our tour agency, they're going to take care of us. They're going to make sure we don't go to places we shouldn't go and that we're taken care of on the ground over there. So that's just a little bit of backgrounder to our trip to Israel in February. Jumping to our next guest, I do want to introduce Dania Andreos. And Dania is a representative with Operation Christmas Child and here to talk today about packing a shoebox for our audience. So, Dania, welcome to the program.
Hello, good afternoon, Walker. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you on. We love talking about Operation Christmas Child. We've been doing this for a long, long time here on American Family Radio. But tell us your story. Tell us a little bit about your background, and then we'll jump into the whole shoebox project.
Yeah, so I'm actually one out of 220 million children that received a shoebox gift since 1993. I come from a country in the Middle East where about 98% of the population were not Christians. So that meant that my family, who lived in that part of the world in the Middle East, we were faced with severe persecution because we would follow Jesus and we were sharing our faith with others. I remember many times we received threatening letters giving us the option of stop telling people about Jesus, leave the village, or my family would be killed. You know, and so that was one of those challenges that we faced living there. And the second challenge was poverty. My dad worked hard to provide for us, but it was still not enough to provide school supplies, hygiene items. Sometimes we had to share a toothbrush and also our daily food. In the midst of those times, as hard as they were, my parents encouraged me to always pray and bring my needs to God, even when they couldn't afford it for me. So I remember one specific need that my family had that we could not afford, and that was to have a radio so we can listen to a Christian radio station in our own language. But it was so expensive to afford, but we brought it to God in prayer along with all of the needs that we have. And one very special day, we went to church gathering, and there I learned that I was going to receive a gift for the very first time in my life. I was so excited. When I opened the shoebox, I found school supplies, I found hygiene items, and beautiful toys like a Slinky and a Beanie Baby. But the biggest surprise for my family was finding inside the shoebox gift a mini, fully functional radio.
Hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. And the shoeboxes have impacted so many lives. You mentioned the 200 plus million children that have received them and the hundreds of thousands that have confessed faith in Christ. I know you guys have the Greatest Journey, which is a discipleship curriculum that you offer to local pastors and local churches. I've been on one of the trips, one of the shoebox delivery trips, and seen it firsthand, the impact that's happening around the world. Talk to our audience about the shoebox itself, right? What are some things to put in it? And the significance of the shoebox. It seems insignificant at face value, but you just talked about the impact it had on your life and your family. So talk about the shoebox and maybe some recommendations on what should go in the shoebox.
I mean, the shoebox gift for me, besides the items that I could not afford, and honestly, it was like a dream receiving them because I had never seen such a thing. So it symbolized God's care and love for me, and especially when I felt rejected by the people around me because of my faith. So that shoebox gift, God used it to ignite my faith and keep going even in the hardest of situations. Now, as you mentioned, the Greatest Journey Discipleship Program, it started in 2009, and when children receive shoeboxes, they're invited back to attend this 12-lesson discipleship program. And since it started in 2009, over 15 million children have enrolled, and out of that, 25 million children made decision to follow Jesus. Now, I don't know how many of you have 50% success rate when you share the gospel, you know, and people accept Jesus, but that's pretty incredible to know, to see that it all starts from what we call a simple shoebox gift, right? It's so simple that you can take any shoebox you have in your closet, or you can also order some from the website. I know Hobby Lobby used to sell some as well. You can buy, but in Dollar Store, I mean, honestly, whatever standard size shoebox you can get your hand into, you can fill it with school supplies, hygiene items, toys, and what we call like a wow item, like a soccer ball maybe, or a doll. I know for me it was a radio, but you don't have to put a radio in every shoebox if you don't want to.
Absolutely.
And then, yeah, I mean, if you want to, that would be great. But honestly, pray over it and see where the Lord, what the Lord leads you to put inside. And as you fill it up, we can include a $10 donation that covers the shipping, the materials, the gospel materials as they share the gospel with the children, and then drop it off at your closest drop-off location. And this week is actually National Collection Week. So we are collecting shoeboxes all over the United States, and you can go to our website, SamaritansPurse.org/OCC, and find the closest drop-off location next to you. Pray over it, drop it, and just trust that the Lord will place it at the right hand of a child.
Absolutely. Well, Dania, thanks so much for coming on, and we appreciate, we love your testimony. We love having people on with Samaritan's Purse that have been recipients of the shoebox and have a personal testimony about the impact. So thanks so much for coming on, and we'll keep promoting this.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. That's Dania Andrios, and she is with Operation Christmas Child, Samaritan's Purse, and amazing testimony there about how the shoebox makes, in this case, an eternal impact with her testimony and with her conversion to Christianity and the trickle-down effect with her family. It's truly amazing what something as simple as a shoebox can do for people around the world. And you and I might look at a shoebox and think, how is that going to make an impact? But the reality is, folks, is this is a door opener, is what I call it. And not only that, but the people around the world, folks, do not have it like we do. And this is one thing we just can't forget. And this is not only applicable to the shoebox discussion and Christmas, but to every aspect of American life and how we view ourselves and our nation and the world. The rest of the world, folks, doesn't have it like we have it in America. There's a lot of people around the world that live in abject poverty. Hunger is a common problem around the world. Poverty is a common problem around the world. And so we need to remember that. And this is not to make us feel guilty because we are more prosperous in America from a material standpoint or otherwise, but it should just lead us to have a balanced perspective and be grateful for what we have and want to preserve it and want to export our blessings around the world. I mean, that's our founding fathers. One of the key reasons that they set up this nation is to be an exporter of the gospel of Jesus Christ, to be an exporter of the blessings of Christianity. And so we just can't forget that as we talk about needs around the world, as we talk about poverty around the world, and specifically sending these shoeboxes. So if you want to send a shoebox, go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. You can either choose a drop-off location near you. There's like over 4,000 drop-off locations. Or you can even pack a shoebox online and just donate to a Samaritan's Purse, and they'll pack it for you. And you can hand pick the items that are in the shoebox, and they'll pack it for you. So either way you want to go about this, if you want to pack your own shoebox, be a little more hands-on, that's perfect. That's preferable. If you want to go online to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC and donate and build your shoebox online, then the Samaritan's Purse team will build it and pack it and ship it for you. So both options are there available for you, our listening audience. But we do encourage you to participate in Operation Christmas Child this year. And this is National Collection Week. The 25th is the final day to turn in your shoebox. The 25th is the final day to turn in your shoebox. One last item I want to mention before we wrap up the show today is I've talked about these recess appointments, the reasons behind it, why President Trump should receive recess appointments, should be permitted to do recess appointments. I haven't really delved into the constitutionality of it from a more than a surface level understanding. And maybe we'll have on a guest here in the next few weeks to talk more in depth about the recess appointments from a legal constitutional perspective. But I did want to give you some numbers. So listen to the number of recess appointments that presidents going back to Reagan have submitted and had placed in different executive level positions. President Reagan had 240 recess appointments. President H.W. Bush, or Bush 1, had 77 recess appointments. President Clinton, and funny story here, when I was growing up with Clinton, I was young enough, I used to stay home with my mom, and she would say, "What do you think about Bill Clinton?" And I would go, and I would point my thumb down about Bill Clinton, because maybe I either saw my mom do that, or I was watching too much Fox News. Who knows? But I used to give Bill Clinton a thumbs down when I stayed home with my mom as a child. So that's my Clinton story. So Clinton had 139 recess appointments. President Bush 2 had 171 recess appointments. Obama had 32 recess appointments. And Trump got zero in his first term, by the way. So this raising concerns about Trump getting recess appointments, and these concerns are coming from other conservatives. They're coming from, I ranted on this for at least 20 minutes on Monday, but the concerns from the liberal media and the Democrats in Congress and even some of the Senate Republicans about President Trump getting recess appointments. Folks, this has historically been non-controversial. By the way, I did some studying the other day. These recess appointments go back to George Washington, okay? These recess appointments go back to George Washington. So recess appointments are not novel. They're not, nefarious tool of the executive branch. This used to be normal. This used to be completely status quo. It's actually unusual for a president to not have recess appointments. And so President Trump needs these, and we're going to continue fighting for this. One of the primary reasons he needs it is because they're going to slow walk. They're going to have hearings. They're going to have investigations. And they are going to dig up every single negative factoid about every single nominee that President Trump puts forth. And there's no need for all that. There is no need for all this circus that I call it. I call it the most intense pillow fight in America. That's Washington, D.C., the most intense pillow fight in America. They all act like they're against one another, but they all work together to stop good things from happening. So President Trump needs recess appointments. That's the only way he's going to fill his executive agencies under the two-year period with this Congress. So it's got to happen. It's got to happen. President Trump has to have recess appointments, and you're going to hear me talk about it until you're tired of hearing about recess appointments.
Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose Life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance of life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 on your phone and then say the keyword baby. Or you can donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.